Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a
creepy way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about our next movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 1. Captain America, The First Avenger, 2011, directed by Joe Johnston.
What else has he done?
He's done Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, The Rocketeer, Jumanji, Jurassic Park 3, and The Wolfman.
That's a whole lot of suck.
This is the best movie he's ever done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's a pretty low bar.
Well, no, you know what? Honey, I Shrunk the Kids probably made a ton of money. Jumanji made a little bit of money. Jurassic Park 3 made money. The Rocketeer probably underperformed, but was stylistic. And The Wolfman was sort of tanked. Fair enough? Fair assessment?
Sure.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that. This is the best movie he's ever made.
Okay. So, Brother Jay, this is the first time you've seen this movie?
That is correct.
Okay, so we're going to lead with you. What did you think, first time through, Captain America, The First Avenger? Do you have any history with Captain America?
I don't. I was actually going to ask if I could get a primer on the comic books to see where they went wrong.
Drew, you're going to be the
historian. I have questions because to me, this movie, I understand that this movie is trying to put backstory into Captain America so that they can then leapfrog forward into the future and have a new rebooted Captain America for modern times. That's what this movie was like to me. But to me, this movie was completely unnecessary. They could have encapsulated this entire movie as like a short 5 to 10 minute flashback. But a bulk of this movie just seemed completely unnecessary to me.
Yeah, I think your mileage about this movie is really dependent on how open you are to origin stories in general. But, I mean, just a quick primer on Captain America. He was originally a World War II era creation. The whole socking Adolf Hitler on the jaw is a real thing. That comes from, I want to say, the cover of the first comic book he ever appeared on. And he was flat out, you know, a patriotic propaganda. But a beloved character. And then he kind of, I guess, fell out of favor. And interest waned, and then they brought him back. They did move him to modern day, just as you see in this movie.
I don't have any problem with origin stories. I like origin stories. I just think this was... So, I guess here's my question. How close to the comic books was this origin story in movie form?
They took a lot of liberties, like his squad of commandos. They were real comic book characters, but they were not his team. They were actually Nick Fury's team, because Nick Fury was a war era character as well, originally. But you know, I collected Captain America comic books in the 80s and early 90s, and. You know, it was after he'd been brought into modern continuity. You know, and he was a member of the Avengers at the time, had been a founding member. And I always read the Captain America comic books, mostly because I had to. because stuff happened in them that affected other titles. But I always found him to be a super corny character. Better served in small doses. So I was curious about how they would tackle him in the movies, and I wasn't overly optimistic.
So from my perspective, and again, I haven't read the comic books. So going through the movie and kind of experiencing the true origin story that they're laying out, I was having a hard time that this universe just accepted there's all this futuristic technology that blows shit up, right? That it's just this supernatural force. Nobody questions it. Nobody's surprised by it. That was the first thing. So I'm like, okay, well, it's a hero universe. I need to absolve myself of anybody having a realistic reaction about anything that's, you know, PFM.
You mean like the Tesseract?
Yeah,
it turns out that's my problem too. But so there's going to be a lot more of that coming up.
Yeah. So there was that, but also I was really kind of, was Tony Stark a big part of Captain America's actual origin story, or was this just shoehorned in to tie in later with Iron Man? Not Tony Stark, but
Howard Stark.
Yes.
Yeah. That is just a typical retcon.
Okay. It felt like it.
Well, except that it was probably retconned in the comics too, right?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, yeah. The comics have, what, like 80 years of soap opera. I mean, the whole thing is a soap opera. They go back and there's twins and there's people that are dead that come back to life and characters get replaced by other characters.
I think my overriding problem with this, the movie was fine. I didn't hate it. I was entertained by it. It flowed. It was fine. It was a perfectly fine movie. It just didn't, there was nothing in it that I was like, this is the best part of it. It was Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
He was the best part. So,
arguably he's the best part of the comics too.
And Toby Jones is good to see as well. As always. So I think my part was, I thought that this is again, a fine movie, but just, I don't understand what the whole point was. Cause it seemed like a majority of what was in this movie was pointless because they were setting a whole bunch of stuff up and then didn't care about any of it.
Because
they're just going to leave it behind.
That's the thing. I don't think it's that they didn't care about it. I think it's that there were certainly things that were not addressed in this movie. And I think that's just the nature of them. It's surely at this point deciding that they actually were building a cinematic universe.
Yeah, because this is really like deep into it, right?
It's the fourth movie, and at this point they knew they were going to make the Avengers.
Yeah, yeah. This is almost the Avengers is the end of Phase One, right?
Right.
And then Phase Two is like six movies also. And Phase Three is like 11 movies or something.
Sounds right.
Yeah. And now we're going to have Phase Four movies coming out. Maybe.
We were supposed to in May. Yeah.
That was like the Black Widow. Not Black Widow. Yeah, Black Widow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Widow. I'll say the first time I watched this movie, I was super surprised at what they did. I mean, after they'd done the two Iron Man movies and even the Incredible Hulk and then Thor. So I guess this is the fifth movie if you count the Hulk. You know, the movies so far had been, I'd say, above average. They had exceeded expectations. But they hadn't been truly great. I mean, Iron Man was pretty great, but.
Certainly nothing between Iron Man and this movie.
Right. I mean, they've all been fine. They've been what? Inoffensive. And then this movie came along, and you know, expectations are starting to ramp up and ramp up. They're going to tackle this super corny character, but they're going to do it as a World War II movie, which is, you know, if you just think about that, that is a really bizarre choice. Super bizarre to go back in time.
Yeah, this whole, this whole movie takes place in World War II.
Yeah. And I remember I was really interested in this movie, and you know, some images leaked out, and they're images of his first, like, really super cheesy costume when he's doing the PR tour.
The first time I saw the motorcycle, I'm like, oh shit, this is going to be like an 80s or 70s, I guess.
Yeah, and nobody knew the context of those, so those leaked out, and people thought that was his actual costume.
Yeah.
And everybody was starting to really get concerned about the quality of this movie. And the first time I got done watching it, I had a similar reaction. I was like, okay, well, that was pretty okay. It's really weird.
I think my problem is that I didn't care about any of this movie. There was really no, I never was able to get really invested in the movie per se. I really wanted to see a whole lot more of the Red Skull, which I don't know was really what you wanted in a movie. Cause I really dug his car, by the way. I think that was,
probably they nailed the Red Skull movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The Red Skull is great. He looked great.
Yeah.
The effects were great.
Yeah. Although I did have some dissonance because I kept seeing Jim Carrey from The Mask, so I was kind of fighting that image for a little bit, but I got over it quickly. But
wait till they get a load. No, that's Jack Nicholson. What I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I was going to say wait till they get a load of V, but that's two separate things. Anyway,
that was nicely done though.
Next, if it wasn't because I took the wrong movie, but yeah, thank you. I tried.
But I think I was just having a hard time. Like I really didn't. None of this movie really made me care about any of it. Is the problem? And there was enough annoying in it that I was just like, this is just why? Why is this here? Why is this? Why did they make this choice? So, I guess that's what I'm struggling with. Why was this movie made?
Oh, I think I know. I mean, from my perspective, first of all, I'm not quite at the age where I'm going to be watching the History Channel a lot, but I guess that time is coming probably. But you know, the nice thing about World War II is that there's definitely good guys and definitely bad guys. I think World War III would be much the same, although I think the map will be changed quite a bit. Depending on whether the election gets stolen, we might just we may already know who the Red Skull is. It'd be more of an orange skull. Anyway, but so I like the World War II setting because, again, definite bad guys. And the Red Skull is a great example of the baddest of the bad guys. And plus, the Red Skull has what Adolf Hitler didn't have, at least to, again, to my born in the very late 60s. You know, he's not very physically imposing, Adolf Hitler. He's evil, and he's a very persuasive speaker if you speak German. But otherwise, he's kind of a little bit effeminate and, you know, sort of smaller than like the gigantic Teutonic image, the Aryan image, you know.
He's just a short mustachioed screaming guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Who happened to be, you know, like the one of the most evil people in the history. So, you know, so the Red Skull satisfies that. And again, I was asking Drew some context too. Drew's our go-to guy for comic history because I had some different Captain America memories. A lot of my Captain America memories come from listening to the same Power Records album over and over and over again, where Baron Zemo was the bad guy. And I did a little deep dive on Baron Zemo after I did a deep dive on the Red Skull. And yeah, it's impenetrable, the history, because like the Red Skull, for instance, the Red Skull has been a whole bunch of people, and the Red Skull, you look at it, so the Red Skull at one point captured Hitler's soul in the, what is it, the whatever that cube is, and the cosmic cube.
Cosmic cube.
And I think at one point Captain America was trapped in the cosmic cube, and at one point the Red Skull was trapped in the cosmic cube, and the Red Skull's identity changed along the way. And the way I remembered it, the Red Skull was basically the same, like the analog to Captain America. He was like the toughest Nazi, and he was like the one who would spread fear. He was the face of the cruel Nazi Empire, and that way, or the Reich or whatever. And so Captain America was a direct reflection of that, the super soldier program or whatever. Now going even deeper, I realized, okay, I guess Johann Schmidt, who is a Nazi officer, Hugo Weaving, is he helped develop this super, the, no, or who, I'm sorry, am I thinking of Truman Capote? Did he help develop the super soldier serum? Anyway,
in the movie,
just in general, I mean, was the Red Skull injected with the super soldier serum? Is that how he got, or did he?
I don't think so.
He just wore a red mask, right?
I want to say, if you've done a deep dive recently, you probably actually know more than I do, but I want to say he was just like trained in martial arts directly by Adolf Hitler originally.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know about whether Adolf was his sensei, but yeah, he was like the toughest fighter in the German army.
Yeah. And then eventually through comic book shenanigans, he gained some superpowers. At one point he had his consciousness, implanted into a clone of Steve Rogers.
Oh.
So he was his exact physical equal.
So this movie kind of combined all those things, which again, I don't mind. Talking about Baron Zemo, Baron Zemo is where I learned of Zyklon B, which was one of the gases they used to actually gas concentration camp people. I learned that in the Power Records thing, and he was using Zyklon B as the sea poison gas. The next time I heard Zyklon B was in the movie Falling Down, where when Michael Douglas goes to the neo-Nazi store, the guy shakes the canister and says this used to contain Zyklon B, but it's empty, which means it's been used. And that was like part of the appeal. So I think, okay, well, Baron Zemo must be even more evil. So then I looked at Baron Zemo a little bit. Turns out Baron Zemo started like in the 1700s, blah, blah, blah. He wore a cowl on his face for some reason, but he invented like his secret world conquering technology he invented was a super glue. And so he was, I don't know how that was going to work. But then there was a hero by the name of Paste Pot Pete, who then somehow upended this glue onto Zemo, and so Zemo's cowl permanently stuck to his face.
Yep.
And it's like, I can't get the Santa Barbara theme out of my head, and B, I just had to stop. I had to stop reading and walk away. I also looked up a little bit about Hydra, and mm-hmm. I had the same reaction. It's like I looked at Hydra, and I'm like, oh, this is too much. This is like, oh, Hydra started out in like ancient Egypt and then somehow became part of the Hand in Japan. And also all of the, anything that's ever been talked about in any comic book, somebody went and decided they're going to put they're going to put their yarn map to good use and connect everything.
It is one of the things I appreciate about the movies. Because they just simplify everything.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Works out fine. And yeah, no, I do want the Red Skull's car for sure.
Yeah, no, that car was amazing.
I also have an advantage over the two of you of having watched all of the movies. So now I can see where the threads are leading and appreciate them more. You know, it doesn't help this movie as a standalone thing, but knowing, you know, I think they really stuck the landing, and knowing that, it makes me appreciate this movie all that much more. This movie gets better every time I watch it.
Well,
the first time I watched it, I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. But I watched it twice in the last 11 days. And I'm to the point now where I love this movie. I love it.
I have two real-time reactions from both of our parents.
To the Avengers? To Captain America?
Yeah, they just finished watching it.
Sweet.
Oh, wow. Breaking news.
I know.
Hey, this is twice. Mom has come in with breaking news. The last time was with you, Jason.
What did I do?
No, when we watched Robot and Frank, remember?
Oh.
I'm going to hope that the reaction to this was much more positive than Robot and Frank.
Dad liked it. And then I said, and what did you think is what my response was. And then her response was, and I quote, "I liked the characters. You can start to see connections to the later movies, Howard Stark, for example. Captain America is not my favorite, but it was a good movie. It's amazing to me that both Dad and I have made it through all the Marvel movies so far without falling asleep."
And that's saying something, because these are long movies.
They are.
It doesn't look like they're going to get shorter.
No, they won't. There's so much about this movie that I appreciate now. Like, Tommy Lee Jones is doing work in this movie.
Oh, sure he is.
He's great. Hayley Atwell as Peggy Carter. I love her.
Yeah. She had her own series.
Great. Which was good. It was good.
And
it didn't have any right to be good, but it was good.
Well, that's the thing, is like, how do you make, really is a cinematic universe when you're talking about putting out a TV show that's a period piece.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I know we're not going to talk about this series anytime soon, but the DC comic universe, you know, that's the thing about Wonder Woman. I thought the Wonder Woman movie was fine, but unlike World War II, World War I isn't as interesting to me. If I lived in England or France or, you know, anywhere in Europe, I'm sure it would be much more interesting and probably devastating. But, you know, it's sure there were good guys and bad guys, however the propaganda portrayed it. But to me, World War I doesn't have the evil that World War II does.
It doesn't have the villainy.
Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, I mean, just the type of warfare in World War I was brutal. So horrific.
Yeah. And the scale was something that we had never seen. So, yeah, there's that. No, I'm not saying World War I was a joke. I'm not saying it was fake news. But, again, like World War II just, you know, to me, it lends itself more to, okay, there are definite good guys, definite bad guys. You can see their insignia. I mean, they really embraced branding.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there was World War I propaganda all like crazy, but I bet you nothing to the extent of World War II. I don't know. It would be interesting to watch somebody else's A Journey of Discovery in a documentary form about that. I'm not going to go digging on my own for this one. I have bigger things to dig into. We'll talk about that later. But
how did you guys feel about Bucky?
Okay, here's the thing about Bucky. I hate the name Bucky.
Bucky's terrible.
Yeah. I hate the fact that he was basically Captain America's Robin. At least that's how he was portrayed initially, at least in my memory.
Yep, in the comic books.
In the comic books, yeah. Not in this movie. In this movie, he was the real soldier and Steve Rogers. By the way, I thought what they did with like puny Steve Rogers that turns into buff Steve Rogers, I thought that was great. I thought it was fantastic work, and I think the effects hold up.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about Stanley Tucci. He was amazing in this movie.
Stanley Tucci's always amazing. He is a goddamn treasure.
But yeah, the Yeah, the special effects, start to finish in this movie, were fantastic.
And I thought this had the perfect amount of you know, there were some tongue in cheek moments, but there was also, you know, some fairly serious peril moments. And yet, you know, you never forgot it was a comic book movie. They had just enough of the fantastic, like, action scenes with Steve Rogers, you know, running at the speed of a car or whatever, and grabbing, you know, ripping the car door off and using it as a shield and all that kind of fun stuff, to, you know, to keep you in the comic book movie feel without it just going wildly off into actual cartoon, like buffoonery.
I'm trying not to gush because I'm not gonna say a bad word about this movie.
Okay, I want your passion though. I want you to gush because tell me first of all, do we know anything about Sebastian Stan, the guy who plays Bucky?
I'd never seen him before this movie.
Okay, spoiler, Jason. Sorry to point this out. Bucky comes back.
Of course he does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's, you know, again, it's a comic book movie. Potentially everybody comes back. I have it on good authority. Many of these characters die, but maybe not.
You know, yeah, when I watched this movie, yeah, by the time I had stopped collecting comic books, Bucky, the original Bucky, the one who died in World War II, was one of like two like untouchable deaths in Marvel Comics. There was Bucky, and then there was Gwen Stacy in the Spider-Man comic books. Those were two deaths that I think the very top editors had said, we will never undo those.
Because those were pivotal to the characters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and yet.
Yeah. Bucky died in this movie, and when I saw that, that's it. I expected it because I knew Bucky died. The way he died was a little shocking to me. Yeah. And
reminded me of Train to Busan.
A little bit. But yeah, I did not expect him to come back, actually.
Yeah, well, neither did I. But again, sorry, Jason, spoilers.
I won't remember.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Yeah, you are a parent's child. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, the fact that Steve Rogers is a cheesy character, I think is good. And I think this movie, it goes 2 hours into explaining why Captain America is sort of a corny character. He's always going to be a square.
Yeah, he's going to be a square, but I don't think he's corny in these movies. And probably a lot of that has to do with the charisma of Chris Evans.
Oh, sure.
Before this movie, I'd seen him in a couple things. I did not think he had this type of charisma. He played the Human Torch in the Fantastic Four movies. And as it turns out, those maybe it was the fault of the movies because they were bad, but he was just kind of a zero in those movies. But yeah, the heart that he plays, like the earnest nature of the way he plays Captain America, I think really, really nails it. I could do this all day. It gets me every time. I love it.
Well, you see, Iron Man is a fundamentally flawed character, mm-hmm. but Captain America is a fundamentally like true character.
Yeah, I mean, even before he gets the super soldier serum, he, like, his virtue is already, like, unattainable for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Like, he is so brave and pure of heart that he's just this idealized version of how you would want to be when faced with unfortunate circumstances.
Yes. And a patriot to boot.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got that working for him. You know, the kind of patriotism we can get behind.
And clever. He's not just like a big dumb
shock.
Oh, no.
He's no Thor. Which, by the way, Thor is the big dumb jock of the whole group.
Yes.
And more than the Hulk. It was literally a big dumb jock.
Yep.
I love that romance. I really do. But yeah, so we have, okay. So we, again, we talked about how, we have, Stanley Tucci, who plays the like what Nazi defector, Dr. Abraham Erskine, and
German. He was never a Nazi.
I'm sorry, German. Yes, yeah. I guess he was. He yeah. He's a sorry. He's a German scientist, who is pure of heart and therefore could not work for the Nazis.
He's the soldier equivalent of Werner von Braun.
Yeah, exactly. Well. Actually, yeah, I think didn't Werner von Braun actually like build the V2 rockets and stuff? That was the whole operation.
Nazi paperclip thing.
Yes. Once the rockets are launched, who comes where? They come down. It's not my department.
Gather round while I sing you a Werner von Braun. A man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Nazi schmatzi, says Werner von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Werner von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Werner von Braun. You too may be a big hero, once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Werner von Braun.
Anyway, okay. Yeah, so we have Stanley Tucci. Again, and Stanley Tucci, have you guys seen The Lovely Bones?
Yes.
Yeah. Stanley Tucci's even great in The Lovely Bones. And spoiler, he is not a good guy. It's a good book, by the way.
Very unpleasant movie.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. It's a better book than a movie, which, you know, again.
I assume the book is also very unpleasant.
Yeah, that's not great. Yeah. Jason, are you familiar with The Lovely Bones?
I am not.
The Lovely Bones is a movie narrated by a 12-year-old girl who has been murdered.
Oh,
raped, well, and, murdered, raped and murdered. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's bad.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So she's dead from the jump, and is our narrator.
Who is the actress?
Oh, who was the actress? She was good.
Was it Saoirse Ronan?
Hey Siri, who starred in The Lovely Bones?
The Lovely Bones features Mark Wahlberg, Rachel Weisz, Susan Sarandon, and others.
Oh, yes, it is Saoirse Ronan. I've never ever thought of The Lovely Bones as a Mark Wahlberg vehicle.
Yeah, I have no memory of him in there.
Me either. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it's not a bad movie. It's just not pleasant.
Yeah, I'm good. These times are dark enough. I don't, you know.
I so want you to watch. It's okay. Here, let's just take a quick tangent. Here is my wish, and I know that I'm not going to get my wish, okay? It's not going to be my Christmas wish, and it's fine. It doesn't have to be. This is
about Suspiria.
Yes, this is a big ask, okay? I don't want you to watch the 1970 whatever Suspiria by Dario Argento, part of a trilogy, the Three Mothers trilogy. By the way, Mater Suspiriorum is the mother of sighs, S-I-G-H-S. Anyway, that those Italian horror films are a thing I don't particularly like. They're sort of an arty thing, and there's been many people who were inspired by it. It's great. But the 2018 movie Suspiria, which my first reaction is, why would you remake a movie like that? And then I watched the movie and I thought, oh, well, this is really good. And they're doing a thing. I don't know if I like the thing, but they're definitely doing a thing. And then I heard about a podcast called Gaylords of Darkness.
Jinkies, what's that gross book made out of skin?
It's not a book, it's a tome made out of skin.
Ew, what's it say?
Behold the collected apocrypha of Stacy Ponder, the writer for Final Girl.
And Anthony Hudson, the programmer for Queer Horror.
And together they are...
Oh my god, don't read it out loud! Don't read it out loud!
They talk intelligently, but also, you know, pretty campily about all these movies they like. And they were so in love with it. I'm like, wow, okay, they're getting a lot more out of this than I did. And then I heard their interview, or sorry, their review or their episode about it, which is like three or four episodes in or to their whole podcast. I think it's called like a sandwich board and a bell is the name of the episode. And then they gush about it they're basically, their Suspiria is our 2001, where they talk about the movie for like 16 episodes in a row in various ways. And then they interviewed both the director and the maybe co-writer of the movie. And both of those guys actually are also gay. And so there's this whole gay thing that's happening that I didn't really understand when I first saw the movie, because I don't bring that with me into it. But once you look at it through that lens, it becomes fairly clear too. But there's also a political angle on this movie. The movie has so many parts to it and is so much richer than any of the Argento movies, and the acting is fucking fantastic. So what I'd really want you guys to do is watch Suspiria, the Amazon original 2018 movie, then listen to the podcast about Suspiria, and then watch it again, and then we can talk about it. Now, this is a huge ask, I realize, but at least watching the movie and then talking about it is something I would like to do.
And I can commit to accomplishing that by February.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, and there, I guess there's no real rush to it. Although, I guess I will jot down a couple of notes, because there are some political notes in this movie that takes place in 1977. So yes, Jason is a period piece.
The kind of movie Eric hates.
Ripped from the headlines. It's amazing. This is a movie I'll probably watch three or four more times and get more out of it. This might be my Captain America. Anyway. Okay.
That sounds right.
When you said mother movies, the first thing that came to mind was that there would be a bechamel, an espanol, a velouté, a hollandaise, and a sauce tomate movie. So
yeah. Nope. That would be great. I like that. I get.
That's like a 1% joke, but.
No, it's great. No, it's the mother of sighs, the mother of darkness, and I forgot the third mother. No, the mother of Good tears. Job. Not the mother of tears. By the way, all of those movies, they get progressively worse. In the
Shocked.
Argento thing, but all of the mothers are mentioned in Suspiria 2018. Also, it involves modern dance, which I don't like either. I don't understand. It's not an art form I appreciate. And yet it works. And there's a reason why it takes place in a modern dance company rather than a dance academy like the first one took place. Anyway, it's fascinating to me. There's all this Red Army faction stuff going on too. So the Bader Meinhof thing. Again, there's lots of little things. And it was supposed to be part of maybe a trilogy. But that will never happen because, of course, it was eventually sold to Amazon and didn't really make any money in Europe in the box office. So unless it becomes a cult feature, which it should be because it's fucking amazing. and Tilda Swinton and Dakota Johnson.
Can't believe you don't like modern dance. You have seen Staying Alive, right?
I have not.
Your whole life?
I have never seen Staying Alive.
What?
Hold on. The John Travolta, Sylvester Stallone movie, Staying Alive? The follow-up to Saturday Night Fever?
Saturday Night Fever.
Yes.
Okay, maybe Sylvester Stallone's not in it, but he trained John Travolta for the movie.
Frank Stallone has a big role in that movie.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Did Sylvester Stallone direct it?
I don't know. He might have. Stallone had a period.
Sorry, inappropriate.
Directed by Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
He's an Oscar award winner, right?
Yeah.
For writing Rocky?
I believe so.
Yeah. And, by the way, awesome in Demolition Man. A movie we need to watch. Part of our Wesley Snipes deep dive.
He also should have won for Creed.
I've heard good things. Yeah. I've heard bad things about Last Blood also.
I haven't seen it.
But anyway. Okay, so sorry. Back to Captain America, the First Avenger. Yeah, we pull all these characters together. We've got Tommy Lee Jones as the colonel, who is doing a lot of work. Stanley Tucci is doing a lot of work. We've got Agent Carter, which is great. We've got, then on the bad guy side, we have Dr. Armin Zola, played by Toby Jones, from Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Atomic Blonde, W, and Frost Nixon. And we have Johann Schmidt, of course, who's the Red Skull, as it turns out, played by Hugo Weaving. And we have Richard Armitage, who is the assassin dispatched to kill Stanley Tucci.
Wolverine, yeah.
Wolverine.
He is the voice of Wolverine in the Wolverine podcast stories.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, have you listened to the Further Adventures of Wolverine? I listened to that first one, the Alaska one, but I've not listened to the Bayou one.
Yeah, I've listened to them all.
Are they good?
Yeah, they're worth. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so anyway, we get Captain America, who's injected with a super soldier, blah, blah, blah. The formula is lost. And then we end up talking about Hydra, which is, of course, the Nazi ninjas.
Well, so the super soldier serum, that's, if you recall, that's what the army was trying to recreate. And that's what they, that's what Thunderbolt Ross injected Tim Roth with.
Yes, for the bad guy. Incredible Hulk. Yeah, in what was Tim Ross' character's name?
Was it the Abomination?
Oh yes, it was. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So that all goes together, and then, of course we have all this cool high tech stuff, which we're going to see a little bit more of in the future movies. We have, of course, yeah. What's the group called? Including Timothy Dum-Dum Dugan, played by Neil McDonough, and
Howling Commandos.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, so a very, 60s, 50s comic thing.
Maybe late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, yep. You know, pretty on the nose, but, you know, hey, it's a comic book thing, right?
Very, very broad characters.
Yeah. It's, I told you about Blood Vessel, right? Yeah, we talked about that. They basically, everyone in that group was on that lifeboat that eventually boarded the German boat. You have every nationality of the good guys represented. Yeah, and so then we have Howard Stark outfitting Rogers. We learn about Vibranium. And he and Agent Carter begin to fall in love. And then, yeah, this is where they assault the train that that Zola is on, and they capture Zola, but Bucky falls to his death.
You yada-yadded so much of his character arc.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So when after Erskine got killed and they lost any other chance of using the super soldier serum, Tommy Lee Jones, he's pissed because he was supposed to have an army of super soldiers and now he has just one. So the government does governmenty things with him, and instead of putting him into battle, they send him on a PR campaign.
Oh, yes, yes. Where he sings and dances.
Yes, and tries to get people to buy war bonds.
This was a bit
that pines to be in battle.
This bit went on way too long.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It didn't bother me because I understood that, you know, they kind of had to sink him to a low place so that he could have a triumph when he actually goes into battle.
I could have cared less. Couldn't have cared less.
Well,
it didn't, I don't know. I am grateful that he didn't actually sing. I would have had to actually walk away from the movie. So,
well, I thought Chris Evans did a really good job of portraying someone who was trying not to just go through the motions, but was having his soul crushed every day.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that you're right, because the colonel didn't get his soldier army. He was basically banished him to PR. Mm. Like, you will have no opportunity to use these things anyway. So yeah. Away
so
with
when
you.
When he ends up trying to entertain the troops near the front line, it's actually like a real, it's hard to watch. Just like how much disdain his fellow troops have for him. Rightfully so.
Oh yeah.
They've seen some shit. He hasn't.
Exactly. And he's their entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not, he's not quite the Playboy bunny is at the, Apocalypse Now.
Pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, you know, actually he's literally, he is that, but
He's the comedian, right?
Exactly. Yeah. 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 So again, yeah, it shows that he takes this stuff seriously. He doesn't want to be used like that.
And so when he learns that the unit that he wanted to join up and be a part of, the 107th, which was the unit that his father was a part of and Bucky was in, when he learns that they were all either killed or captured by the Germans, that's when he goes rogue and he goes on a one-man rescue mission. And I loved his solo raid on the Hydra base. That was great.
It's fun.
Him trying to figure out the limits of what he can do and just not really have any idea, but going full force.
Yeah, it's a comic book movie. They don't let you forget that. But it's not like a Tim Burton comic book movie. Although
well,
with
no Helena Bonham Carter.
Well, with a couple of curly cues on the Red Skull car, it could have been. I mean, they were leaning in that direction as far as, you know, some of the action, you know, and of course that whole scene on the bridge and the warehouse or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it was a little much, but.
And I love going back and watching this movie and watching all the close-ups of Hugo Weaving before he pulls his face off. Because you can tell, I mean, it looks like Agent Smith, but there's something just off about his face. And the very first scene, he kind of moves his skin in a way that doesn't seem natural. And then every other close-up of his face after that is just, I don't know what they did, but it's just slightly off.
Perfect. Snake skinning.
Mm-hmm.
Great, which is fantastic. That's the kind of details we want.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm in the bag so much for this movie that like the cut scene where he jumps across the bridge with the explosion behind him, and then it just cuts to a different scene. I love it. Love that. I love that transition. I mean, that is like such a comic book panel brought to life.
Yeah. Yeah, and not in a bad way. I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, they went for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they succeeded. I think they told the story that you needed to get to the Avengers, to get him to the Avengers. Because by now, you've seen how all of the, you know, the origin stories of these other five characters, and then, or four and him, and then when they all get together, there's you have to do less, there's more shorthand. You don't have to do a lot of background. Although The Avengers is a long movie too.
Yeah, settle in. They all are.
Yeah. And yeah, again, I hate to say it, but I don't like the Tesseract. I don't like the Infinity, whatever it was, the Cosmic Cube. Eventually there'll be Infinity Stones or something. I can't imagine liking any of that. Although, Jason, you're already up on that because you already saw Guardians of the Galaxy, and I haven't seen any of those, so I don't even know what we're getting into there. Yeah, but I am interested in how this all ties together. It all ties together in a 18 movie more arc for us that will lend Drew to cry at the end of it.
Several times.
Yeah. That's amazing to me. That's the power of art. We'll talk about the power of art in Suspiria 2018 when we talk about it in 2021.
I saw a Twitter clip of people watching a certain part of Avengers Endgame in the theater, and like the crowd reaction, and just watching that like made me tear up.
Similarly, I got into a little YouTube hole last night where I watched girls who pass out during those slingshot rides.
Sounds like the exact same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, trust me, if you look up girls who pass out on slingshot rides.
I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
Somebody collected a whole bunch of them. And it sounds like they all come from the company.
Dudes never pass out. It's only girls.
Oh, probably. But one of the girls actually says to her passed out friend, "Oh man, we should have bought the video." Nah, you didn't get a video, honey. You are forever now on the internet. Also, this is why I don't go on those rides. Well, that and being gigantic. But even if they would allow me to get strapped in and shot in a slingshot, yeah, I would I'd be afraid that all of a sudden I'd be like, and then limp, flopping around as it goes back and forth, slip out of the thing. And anyway, okay, so sorry. So back to Captain America. Jason, do you have any notes? I mean, we're yada-yadding a bunch of the plot, but the movie itself is just basically an origin story of Captain America. He ends up after I guess, so at the end, he and the Red Skull...
Wait, hold on. Okay,
sorry.
After he takes down the first Hydra base, Tommy Lee Jones finally acquiesces and lets him lead his own team into battle. And he goes full on like Tombstone on Hydra.
Oh, yes. So you're right. Like the montage, you mean?
Yeah, we don't get a lot of montages in Marvel movies. And this one I thought was delightful.
Also makes me want to watch Tombstone again. That was fun. Yeah. And then at the end, again, I forgive the final scene on the Red Skull's plane and that whole thing. Like, that whole thing I thought was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But, mm-hmm. I forgave it because it was fine. And at the end, he ends up sacrifices himself for humanity, but ends up getting frozen and... Then he wakes up 70 years later by Samuel Jackson saying, "I'm tired of these motherfucking Avengers on the motherfucking planes." Something like that.
That's exactly how it went down. What did you think of the chemistry between Steve Rogers and Peggy Carter?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, I'm glad it wasn't like a huge involved love story.
Yeah, the first time I watched the movie, it didn't really affect me much. But in subsequent rewatches, I find his final the commitment to dance with her to be very touching.
Yeah. So, okay, spoiler. So does she come back as a 90-year-old woman or whatever to dance with Steve Rogers?
No.
Because I think in the comic book she might.
In the comic book, I think he ends up dating her, like, grandniece.
Ah. Well, that's weird.
It is very weird.
That's, yeah.
So, sorry, Jason. You look like you were about to say something. I interrupted with more gushing.
No. I mean, you know.
What did Jesse think of this movie?
No, he didn't watch it.
Has he seen it before?
I think so. So I think that tells you what he thought of it. Because he was like, nope, I'm good. I took notes, but they're all really, they're just not relevant at all. But the one note that I wrote down that I chuckled at is that at the near end of this movie where it's just another big Acura ad. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It made me laugh. So, but other than that, no, we've discussed all the rest of what I had. The only thing was like, the Howard Stark thing, which is bugging me. Because I didn't like, him at all, so he was really distracting.
You didn't like his character?
Nope.
Okay.
At all, and I didn't like the actor either. So that was really tap dancing on my nerves.
Hmm.
Just a thing.
Yeah. So, what would you give this as a judgment? What was your grade? Your score?
I'm gonna give it a C+.
Ooh, it's harsh.
Hurts.
Yeah, because I think this is maybe a B plus or an A minus.
No, not for me. I mean, like I said, I don't think this was a necessary story. It was too long, and there was too much in it. If it had been a little shorter, a little tighter in story, it would be better. But it's just there was just like too many pieces that they were trying to cram in.
No, but I think
it was like sure.
I know I interrupted, but that's what I do. I want
to used to it.
Yeah, I want to say that that since we need Captain America for this, not only for the next movie but for the whole arc, and I think we needed to be brought. We needed to be brought along a little bit to accept Captain America. Because, again, Captain America is kind of, it has the potential of being super cheesy. In a way, you know, like Tony Stark, it's easy to like Tony Stark because he's a bad boy and he's irreverent and he's funny. And Captain America could be none of those things. But this movie kind of humanizes him in a way that you need him to be human. You need to have some affection for him going into the rest of the movies, I think. At least the movies that I've seen.
Chris Evans in this role is such a home run. I mean, even the last line, the last scene of the movie, when Nick Fury asks him if he's going to be okay, and he just looks bummed and says, yeah, it's just, I had a date.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a cheesy line, but
sure.
Chris Evans' delivery and the whole thing, it against all odds, it lands.
Well, with the heavy bags is great.
I think that what kept going through my head is that Captain America is a buffer Batman without gadgets.
He has one gadget.
No.
Yeah, no. Plus Batman is dark.
Well, Batman is a psychopath.
Yeah. Yeah.
Batman has money and resources and gadgets.
Yeah, but Batman is fucking the system. Captain America is the system. Captain America must be within the system. Well, I guess we'll see.
Well, not really.
Because again, my opinion of Batman has evolved. Let's say, read my lips. I don't know if you guys enjoyed that outro, but I love that.
I had two other songs I were hoping were in there, but you've probably never heard them, so it's fine.
No, you can send them to me for our our election wrap up in January 21st,
2024.
Yeah.
Save them for the 300th episode.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Ugh. So Drew, I guess I don't even have to ask you, but I will ask you since it's our format. Was it worth it?
This movie is worth it. And if you watch it and you don't like it, I can only recommend that you watch it at least three more times. Maybe after you've seen the rest of the movies. Because honestly, I did not revisit this movie for a long time. There's nothing that drew me back to it. And I think its image had kind of suffered in my memory. So maybe the next time I watched it, I had much lower expectations even. But this is a really good movie. It's a surprisingly good movie with such a bizarre elevator pitch. I mean, I can't imagine going back and thinking, you know, your first few movies have been successful enough that you're going to keep going. Everybody is getting really excited about a team up movie, the likes of which has never successfully been done before. But before that, you're going to throw in a World War II movie.
Yeah.
That's a choice.
Yeah. And I like that you're passionate about it because, again, passion might bring other people back to the table. Like, I don't know, the passion for Suspiria 2018 brought me back to the Suspiria fold, and I have now found it to be a well of sweet, sweet nectar. Anyway, I got to take a break on that line of bullshit. Then we'll go on to housekeeping.
Yeah, so Jason, I assume you haven't seen The Avengers?
Uh-uh.
So that's the next movie up. But after The Avengers is Iron Man 3.
Okay.
Iron Man 3, so the director, Jon Favreau, did not return to direct Iron Man 3.
Okay.
So instead, Robert Downey Jr. called up a buddy of his, someone who he credits with reviving his career, Shane Black.
Oh.
Shane Black wrote and directed Iron Man 3.
So am I going to like it better?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's fair.
I do. It might be the MCU version of True Detective season 2 for me. I like it. I like it quite a bit. I might be the only one. Like, ever.
We're talking about
Iron Man 3.
Oh, okay.
Written and directed by Shane Black.
Yeah, Christmas movie.
Part of his buddy cop trilogy.
Yeah, there we go. The Last Boy Scout. Ugh.
No.
No?
No. What? Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Iron Man 3, and The Nice Guys.
Oh, okay. Didn't Shane Black do The Last Boy Scout?
I think he wrote it. He didn't direct it,
okay.
Though.
Got it. All right. Are we on housekeeping?
I think we are.
Housekeeping.
So in a strange thing this morning... between hits, with me tapping this snooze alarm on my alarm. The last couple of days, I have not gotten the song Sweet Transvestite out of my head. So I listened to that and the Time Warp, in the shower and then, drove to work listening. Cause obviously the next after those two things, I just dropped in. Yeah, you know, to see what condition my condition was in by Kenny Rogers, the first edition.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah. And it's hard to recommend, you know, again, Rocky Horror Picture Show is another weird movie to try to explain to somebody, especially since I don't have the experience that Jason has of seeing the thing with the toast and the rice and stuff. All I have is the movie. And more than that, I mostly just have the soundtrack to go off of. And until we watched it for the podcast, I didn't even appreciate the second half of that movie, which is a much different tone than the first half.
Yeah, it's almost a completely different movie.
Yeah. But but Sweet Transvestite is a fucking brilliant song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's my whole... Also, I don't know if you can hear the cat, but our cats, they do the meowing thing a little bit, but they also do like a weird meowing thing where they're like, meow, like really loud in the middle of the night. So it
sounds like the first part of an old timey siren.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. You experienced this yourself?
Are your cats siblings?
I think so. Yes.
So they're from the same litter.
Yeah.
I've never experienced this with cats before. Our cats are from the same litter. So they not only do really cute things like sleep, like just like sleep in like one single ball together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they also do this weird thing where they will actually like caterwaul to each other from across the house.
Yeah.
It's like if one of them doesn't know where the other is, they just do this like really guttural, like,
so it's like some call and answer cat echolation.
It really is. It's
I saw some app thing that's supposed to be some sort of technology that you can translate your cat's sounds into what a cat might say if a cat says stuff. Yeah, which I realize is probably bullshit. But one of the things they said during the news story was, you know, cats actually never speak to each other. Like they don't meow at each other. I'm like, that is simply not true.
That's not true.
No,
it's not. Yeah, I saw that same news story. That was actually really funny because he had that giant like collar on the cat translate in real time. And the only thing he could get it to translate was, I am angry.
Exactly. Yes. I'm about to attack.
So I just want to point out that out of the three of us, I am no longer the crazy pet guy. So I just want to point that out. So
you know what? It turns out I was a crazy pet guy the whole time. I just hate dogs barking.
Oh, I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. If we got a dog that didn't bark all the time, I'd be a happy camper.
Bark is so annoying that I taught him how to bark silently.
That's the thing is that a barking dog actually, now I'm understanding things about my father that I didn't before, but I understand like the physical assault on my senses of a dog barking. Just drives me crazy. It's like it takes a bit, you know. No, one bark doesn't do it. One bark
is just like an ice pick directly to your nervous system.
Exactly. And at some point I am going to snap and try to grab ice and throw it across a fence.
Yeah. One slingshot bark doesn't do it, but once you've crossed the threshold, every subsequent bark will do it.
Yep. Uh-huh. And so every time I look at my wife and say, I love these cats, they don't bark, she's like, you don't want me to get another dog. I'm like, no, that's not it. I know you're going to get another dog. I'm just enjoying it while it lasts. Now, I hate the way cats smell. Fucking A. I don't know how you guys do it, but we are trying different methods of keeping the fucking cat odor to a minimum. But litter boxes are gross and they stink.
We have a litter genie.
Yep. Like the diaper genie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we might invest in that. Although, I mean, we've been good every single day, both litter boxes. We all scoop everything. We got the sifting things going on. We've got clumping litter. We've tried different kinds. We throw in baking soda in between the litter sometimes. Turns out all this cat shit is kind of expensive. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of crystal litter?
Yeah, the blue stuff?
Yeah.
I hate it.
Okay, cool. We're not going to do that. And it's like there's a whole thing between clumping and non-clumping and therefore sifting or non-sifting. And Yeah, no, I know. But you know what? You know what? I'm telling you, again, I may be a pet guy from the get-go, because you know what I love? I love having two cats and a laser pointer. Because that shit is hilarious. And the fact that we don't have any carpet in most of the house, and the cats are kind of medium hair cats, which I'm not experienced with either, really. And one of them especially has a lot of hair, like, on the paws. Like, I don't know if this cat is just constantly masturbating or whatever. There's, like, big tufts of hair that come out of the paws. So this cat will slide around every corner, especially when chasing a laser, which is delightful.
Have you broken out the Sphero?
No, but I should, yeah. Will the cats go crazy for that?
Yeah.
Oh, love it. Break out the drone, too.
Yeah, the cats, the cat actually, both of them will sit on top of the birdcage, and the bird will actually climb up inside the birdcage, and they will have their little, one is right side up and one is upside down, and they'll have their little non-fighty fights. Like, the cat will put its paw, and the bird will grab the paw with the beak. And there's no hissing or squawking or anything. It's just like they're feeling each other out. It's kind of hilarious. The bird does not fly out of that. The bird does not avoid the cat. The bird will go right to the cat and engage, but not in a squawking, angry way, which I find totally amazing.
Not yet.
Well, I'm not letting the bird out, like, to play with the cats, because I'm, you know, but still.
Yeah, that's a vet bill you don't want.
Well, and also, I mean, the idea is, you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's mild. Like, last night it was like, what is wrong with that cat? Like, did somebody step on that? Did the cat get caught in something? No. That's what's like, is the cat going into heat or something? I don't know how old they are.
It needs some pumpkin.
I don't know. Well, no, it doesn't need any shock to its diet. It already smells. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, the cats, especially when we first got them, just slept all day long. And at night, they'd sit on your face and do skibbity-pats up on your face while you're trying to sleep. And you're like, no, I don't want to be skibbity-patted in the middle of the night. I don't want you to make biscuits on my belly as I'm trying to sleep. I really don't. As cute as it is. I'm glad you're amused by it.
I love this.
No, it's great.
I love this so much.
It's finally pets I can really enjoy.
This is amazing.
Yeah. So when we get all the dogs, because we're still looking for dogs every single day. I'm not, but the ladies are. Actually, it's so funny. The ladies are actually checking out every single day Animal Control's cat situation, because there's a lot of cats that go in and out of Animal Control. And they've got their eyes on these two thick boys. If you go to Anchorage Animal Control, you'll see two of the biggest cats I have ever seen. I can't remember what their names are, but they are, let's see, how would you describe, tons of fun, let's say. Yes.
Like amber size?
Oh, bigger. Like really, like really big gut. Like,
I still have the picture of Amber over Dad's shoe with the belly hanging over somewhere.
Yeah. No, this is worse. Yeah. These are cats who got the beaties probably, but, yeah. Anyway, that's it from life in the cat house. Now I understand, Mark Marin. Maybe it's the toxoplasmosis has got to my brain. Maybe that's it. It only takes a couple of times of changing the litter box that my daughter swore she would do every day, but I make her do at least help with. Weird. And unlike a dog, the cat won't, like, if you drop something on the floor, the cat won't go and eat it. We're doing a lot more floor sweeping than we used to. Because of the dog, you never have to worry about it. Animal, vegetable, mineral, you hit the ground, it was in the dog's mouth.
If it hit the ground.
If it hit the ground, exactly, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and oh my God. And then, okay, here's a little like peek into my prior nightmare. I'd come home, like, bringing a sack of McDonald's, like, for my family, right? And my daughter and my wife would throw French fries at the motherfucking dog. And so the dog would bark for French fries. And it was this horrible cycle of barking and throwing food. And sometimes the food would be thrown and the food would land in some weird places because, you know, the daughter was not always, well, has never been, say, an athlete.
You mean like perhaps spitting food across the kitchen at the dog?
Oh, I'm not saying that there's not a wide history and maybe this has opened some old wounds. I'm just saying that the barking dog as the direct result of having the french fries thrown at it, like, well, we need to keep throwing the french fries or the dog will bark more. But if you never threw the french fries, there'd be no fucking barking for the french fries. It's like, well, you're just grumpy. No, I'm going insane.
Yeah. Oh, cats I do love none this. Of that.
Okay, well, see, I want to inject a little bit of joy into your life. So,
you know, this reminds me of a time when I was both horrified but also really proud. This was maybe a year or two ago. My girls had one of their friends over, like on a weekend, and they're eating lunch, and I overheard my oldest daughter tell her friend, "No, you really need to make sure that you chew with your mouth closed, because if you don't, it sets my dad's brain on fire."
Yes.
I was like, well, first of all, that is not to be spoken of outside the family. Second of all, yes, thank you.
Oh, future therapy. So, I want to point out that For All Mankind season 2 will have 10 episodes dropping in, I want to say February, and then they'll have a episode per week thereafter. So if you haven't watched it on Apple TV, I would highly recommend it. So
cool.
I'm not sure when my Apple TV runs out.
Yeah, I think mine runs out about my birthday. Although,
nah.
I don't know what we're.
So I did have the conversation with the parents to confirm that we will not be coming up for Christmas.
I heard.
It was sad, I'm sure, but you know, it's the right thing to do.
It is not what I would choose, but again, I couldn't handle like coming up and killing the parents for Christmas.
And it's not just Oregon. It is Oregon for sure, but it's also Anchorage that is having a tremendous spike. And depending on how Thanksgiving goes, I mean, we're actually kind of bumping up against hospital issues. Yeah. No, and it's been super public. You know, we every day I can look and see the hospital numbers, and we don't have a lot of beds, and the percentage of people in the hospital with COVID is much higher than it used to be. And one of the biggest hospitals in the city, or in the state, actually, by definition, just got a new mobile morgue, you know, for overflow. So, anyway.
I mean, not ideal, but we'll come up for summer next year, probably.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff. The positive is that now I have all of December to move.
Yes. Because you got to take your time, right?
Yeah, because I'm going to hit my cap.
Yeah.
So, I'm still taking the vacation time.
Good.
And it'll be fine. So, it'll work out. It'll be the most low-key Christmas ever.
Actually, you know what? We've got a bunch of Marvel movies. It could be a real low-key Christmas.
So anyway, did talk to the parents. We, you know, that they're sad. I'm sad, but we think, you know, it's the best choice for everybody. And we're in lockdown in Oregon anyway right now. So even if we had decided, because we're in lockdown for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And that would have been beyond the window of when we would have been able to travel out. And now there's travel restrictions in place. So not even sure I could get out.
I bet you there'd be days away from bigger restrictions for us too.
Well, and if we did get out, I'm not sure I could get back. Or if I did, it would be a mandatory minimum 2-week quarantine.
Yeah.
And I can't.
Or quite expensive.
Yeah. Well, no, my job would require that I quarantine for 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, you know,
by CDC standards, I would not. I mean,
yeah, I don't know if we have we've discussed this or not, but currently the Alaska state plan says that you have to quarantine for so many days, blah, 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 except you can leave for up to 72 hours and come back to Alaska and not quarantine at all. So you can fly to Seattle. You can, yeah, if you're a resident, you can fly to Seattle, you can fly to Portland, you can fly to Washington, D.C. You can have a day or two of spring break in Florida or Arizona, and then fly right back and just go about your business, which it's got to be a loophole for politicians or something. I don't know why else they would make that loophole. It's weird. Anyway, remember when science was the thing? So, any Drew, you have any housekeeping?
Yeah, I had a fun weekend last weekend. We actually stayed in town last weekend. Thought it was going to be real quiet. And then Sunday night, I got a phone call from the lake house. Just not a good sign.
Uh-oh.
it's the right time of year. It was our temperature alarm. The temperature in the house had dropped below 49 degrees.
Ugh.
Ooh. And this was like 6 o'clock at night.
Sure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So I had to drive out and hope that it was something real simple. And, but luckily it's only an hour and 40 minute drive. So not a whole lot of time to just really stress out about it. Nothing else to do except drive in the dark and think about what, all the possibilities could be.
Having flashbacks of the parents' garage.
Yeah, well, at least that's a more immediate response time. Yeah, so I came all the way out here, got here just a little bit before 8, and it was a quick fix. Something we must have had like a snap power outage, and it tripped the GFCI in our mechanical room, so the furnace had been off for I don't know how long, a couple days probably. Huh. So I just had to reset that, and it fired right back up, but it's in-floor radiant heat. So it is not a quick warm up.
So did you spend the night there?
I did, cause I wanted to make sure that it continued to heat up.
Yeah.
And by the time I got here, it was like 42 degrees. So I had to spend a very, chilly night. And I left the house so quickly. I didn't bring anything. it occurred to me, as I was going to bed that I didn't bring my glasses.
Ah,
and I cannot sleep in my contacts.
Mm.
I have spare contacts here, but I'm not going to sleep in them. So
yeah,
then in the middle of the night, I was completely blind.
Yeah.
With no recourse. And it was so cold that I went to bed wearing a winter hat and a hoodie, and I threw two comforters on the bed. But it was the type of cold where it's fine as long as you don't move. Because uh-huh. Then if you move, you hit a cold spot in the bed. So like every couple hours I was waking up. And then it still felt super cold, but I wanted to make sure the furnace was still running and the house was at least heating up. So I wanted to go check the temperature, and just hopefully it was like 1 degree warmer. So I knew that we were making progress, but I was blind.
Oh,
so, anyway, so that was the thing. It was not a very restful night. But
so what you need is one of those like 40 below sleeping bags, like stuffed in your closet.
Yeah. Or an electric blanket or something.
Well, there's that.
I think that is a investment that we're going to make. But so, I was hanging out here by myself, I wanted to watch something that would that would kind of take my mind off things as I was just waiting for the house to slowly warm up. So I was just browsing through like the Turner Classic Movies channel on HBO Max, and I came across All the President's Men.
Ah.
I haven't seen in quite a while. And I was never like super impressed with that movie. But I thought, oh, this is going to be a meaty movie. It's kind of timely. There are some, it's a bit of an allegory for what might be happening today. And Eric mentioned Shattered Glass a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just really liking, I had a hankering for like a journalism movie for some reason. And, by the way, Eric, I think we should switch out Bodied for Shattered Glass.
Okay.
So I watched All the President's Men, and it's really good. It is not the movie I remember it being. From a plot perspective, it's very unsatisfying.
Oh yeah.
But if you want resolution, but it is such like such a mood. It's so atmospheric, and young Redford and Hoffman are just, they are movie stars.
Oh,
it's great.
Jason Robards. And too.
Yeah,
Hal Holbrook.
He's great. Yeah. Hal Holbrook.
But like Ned Beatty is great.
Everybody, that is a great movie. That movie is way better than I remember it being.
Yeah.
That's why it's in my top 10.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I hope, on the episode where we discussed it, the first time I saw that movie, it scared the crap out of me. It was suspenseful because I didn't fully comprehend what the movie was about because I didn't know anything about it. And so it didn't dawn on me until towards the end of the movie that it was about Nixon, even though they kept talking about it. I just was a dense child. But they had so much suspense with the subterfuge and the spying and the weird rendezvous in the parking lot. And it was creepy. It's a creepy kind of horror movie in some ways.
There's really no subterfuge on the part of the main characters. They are out in the open. They're telling everybody what they're doing. I don't understand why people talked to them.
Yeah. Well, being a source is kind of a thing.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't understand it for sure. Yeah.
But you're right, Jason. It is super suspenseful. And there's so much tension towards the end of the movie. because they never show you anything super sinister. But when Hal Holbrook tells Redford that his life may be in danger,
yeah,
like there's no like real evidence of it in the movie anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But you believe it happens. But yeah, but just the atmosphere is so tense that you're like, you're immediately on edge. You're like, oh shit.
And didn't doubt it. Didn't doubt it when I heard it. Didn't doubt that it was also probably very true.
Yeah.
That was also probably where I learned of like dirty politics.
Rat fucking
and the whole creep thing is hilarious.
Yes.
I really wish you guys would watch Succession.
Okay, yeah.
There is a minor character. He may not even ever be on screen, but they just refer to him as Rat Fucker Sam. We gotta get Rat Fucker Sam on that one.
Do you remember Lee Atwater?
No.
Okay, Lee Atwater was a political operative, sort of in the vein of like Karl Rove or like James Carville or whatever too. But he was one of the ultimate dirty tricks guys. And that was his specialty. In fact, he was the guy who did the Willie Horton ads, I think. And but at the end of his life, because I think he got cancer, and so he was given like a terminal diagnosis, and he basically like went on an apology, not a tour, but more like he had amends to make before he was going to meet his maker. Like maybe this was a religious thing where he basically came clean and said, I was a horrible person. Like what I did was wrong. And I hurt people, to do these things that I thought were politically right, but I knew were morally wrong, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, for some reason, like there are no more Lee Atwaters. I don't think anybody's going to have their moment of realization of the bad things they have done. I think they'll just deny forever. Without getting too far down this path, because I know it bums us all out, but did you happen to see any of the Rudy Giuliani crazy press conference where his hair dye bled down the sides of his face? He quoted my cousin Vinny. It talked about conspiracies in like 16 different directions without offering any proof, because he said he couldn't. While all of his all of the lawsuits are being like flushed right and left, dismissed all the way down the line. And Jason, before you got on, I was mentioning to Drew that I don't know whether this is I'm just a victim of the media here, but the fact that there are still paths to fuck this up for him to steal the election, it worries me. Because
it's troubling.
Yeah, I want to believe that the system will save us, but this particular president seems to be immune to.
Nobody who's currently in charge on the Republican side seems to have any desire to rein in the power, and they don't give me any confidence at all that they would intervene.
It's all about money.
I don't even know money as much as it's their power. They want to maintain their power, and so this is what we're seeing.
It's fascinating.
The special election in January is going to be fraught with, I suspect, disaster. So we'll see.
But it's interesting because I think I'm hoping that all this Giuliani garbage is just to keep the base riled up for that special election.
I'm sure that's part of it. The other part of it is they're bankrolling everything with it. They're making a shit ton of money and fundraising off of this.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And then on top of the fact that right now, you know that with all the firings of the high officials right now, it's a bunch of destroying evidence.
Probably.
They are destroying everything because the people that he's putting in power don't know what they should be preserving, and they're not going to question it anyway.
Well, also, they're fucking poisoning, pilling all these agencies. Like,
yep.
Betsy DeVos has planted grenades all over with the things they've started. Like, getting the things just back to where they were before is going to take some work. But anyway, I'm still hopeful. I try to be hopeful. I'm a hopeful guy. But it does keep me up. That keeps me up at night, and the hospital occupancy keeps me up at night, because it's again, we're not at the point yet, but we are close. Like, it could tip just a couple more weeks of these kind of numbers. It could be real rough.
There's no evidence it's slowing down.
No, it's only accelerating. So yeah. Anyway, it was nice to talk to you guys.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother J. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.